This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
For this month's JodBite, I'm with Dr. Evan Keane from the University of Manchester. Hi, Evan.
Hi.
Could you just introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about what you do in terms of research?
Well, I'm Evan Keane. I am currently based at the Swinburne University when this gets broadcast. Actually, as we're recording this, I'm based in Manchester, where I've been working the last few months. I research pulsars and transient radio bursts and things of that nature.
Okay, so energetic objects that sort of emit bursts for short periods of time then.
Exactly.
Globally speaking.
Exactly.
So we've got you on this month because there's a very interesting new paper that's been published in Nature this month. Could you tell us a bit more about your involvement in that?
Well, pulsar astronomers, we've been trying to find a pulsar near the galactic center for a long time, for years. Decades maybe, with little success. There's many reasons why we'd want to find this. We can use it to measure the strong gravitational field next to the supermassive black hole in the center of the galaxy, which has lots of sighting implications. But despite many really well-organized searches, we found one, but it was by accident a few months ago.
Okay.
So while everyone was at an astronomy conference in Germany, an X-ray satellite in space called SWIFT noticed an X-ray flare coming from the direction of the galactic center, and that made everyone really excited. Another X-ray telescope started monitoring it very heavily. That telescope's called New Star, which is a new satellite.
Okay.
And it noticed that the X-ray emissions from this thing, whatever it was, ruffling in the galactic center, were periodic with a period of 3.7 seconds. So that made all the pulsar people really excited, because that's very similar to the rotation period of a pulsar.
Okay, could you maybe explain the link between the X-ray observations and the pulsar itself? Like, so the pulsar emits X-rays as well as radio?
Yes, so, well, actually, if you look for the thermal emission from a pulsar, it's in X-rays, because the temperature of a pulsar is about 1,000,000 Kelvin, and okay. Anything that's 1,000,000 Kelvin, its color is X-ray. But this had a really bright flare in X-rays,
okay,
for reasons as yet unknown. But it was able to show the underlying spin period. Pulsars are usually studied in the radio, and in fact you can do most things in the radio. So this got everyone with a big radio telescope in the world started pointing at the galactic center to see if they could find this thing, because you can do more useful astrophysical tests in the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that using the Lovell Telescope at Jodrell Bank, and the Effelsberg Telescope in Germany, and in fact many other telescopes scattered around the world.
Right, so everyone started hunting for this elusive pulsar.
Yeah, so for the burst went off at the end of April, and for the first 2 weeks of May, I don't think, there was a lot of astronomers that didn't sleep much, and everyone was just excitedly observing, and when the galactic center had set, everyone was doing calculations and trying to analyze their data quickly before the next night.
Okay, and so what did you guys find?
Well, happily, we found the pulsar. There was actually a bit of a delay. So between the X-ray flare becoming really bright, we immediately looked in radio and didn't see anything. And we were slightly disappointed, like, oh, okay, maybe we can't see it in radio.
Okay.
And there's a number of reasons why you might not see it, which I can go into.
Yeah, please do.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in the galactic center, a lot of ionized material. And there's various effects with that. Such as dispersion and Faraday rotation. So what do I mean by that? Well, when radio waves come from, say, the galactic center towards us, they go through a lot of obstacles in space.
Yep.
Space is not empty.
Sure.
There's lots of particles and dust in that. The short wavelengths tend to be able to hurdle these obstacles easily,
mm-hmm,
and get through, whereas the longer wavelengths barge into everything and get delayed. So there's a delay between the long and the short wavelengths. And this delay can be so long as to smear the signal out and basically erase it.
Okay.
So that was one reason why you might not be able to see something in radio.
So that's known as dispersion.
That's known as dispersion
measure. Right, okay.
So it's quantified by this number called dispersion measure. And everything that we had been able to see roughly near the galactic center had a very high value of that. So that's kind of, we were thinking, oh, maybe we can't see it because of that.
Okay.
Another thing is Faraday rotation. So the light is a wave, and usually it just propagates along like a sine wave in a plane.
Yep.
But if there's a magnetic field or anything like that, the wave will start to spiral, and it'll do a corkscrew type
okay.
pattern.
Yeah.
And that can also make it difficult to detect.
Okay.
So we didn't see it immediately, so we thought, oh, well, maybe these obscuring effects are working against us. Or, as pulsars are kind of like, well, cosmic lighthouses are described, we could have been unlucky in that the lighthouse wasn't pointing at us.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, okay, sure. Maybe it's bad luck. But being persistent astronomers, we thought, well, let's look again the next night, you know. I mean, maybe we'll see it. And we did. There was a bit of a delay, but it came on quite, and it was quite a bright radio source. It was so bright that I was actually surprised, and we were almost doubting it.
Oh, wow.
Because it was just too perfect. but it was there, and we were able to measure it very well. And we measured these dispersion effects and the Faraday rotation effects to be absolutely massive.
Right.
The largest known of any object by quite a bit. But they weren't so large as to make them impossible to measure.
Right, okay.
So these were the key measurements we were able to make with observations spending several weeks with many radio telescopes around the world.
So what did you get out of that, basically? What does that tell you?
What we get out of that is, you remember I mentioned this corkscrew effect called the Faraday rotation.
Yep.
Well, the waves spiral more and more if the magnetic field is higher, or less if it's lower.
Okay.
So you can basically unwind the emission and straighten it up when you measure this effect. And from this, you can tell how much magnetic field the radiation has passed through.
Right.
And then you can say, oh, right next to the galactic center, the magnetic field is this value.
I see.
And it just so happens that this pulsar that we found is very close to the black hole in the center of the galaxy. It's 0.1 parsecs.
Okay.
And you can do some quick calculations to realize, oh, that's in the accretion disk of the black hole.
Right.
So you can directly measure the accretion going into the black hole. I see.
So all the matter that's swirling around it all sort of has a strong magnetic field around it.
Exactly.
A strong magnetic field around it.
So the black hole is powered by eating the material around it.
Sure.
But one key ingredient that was missing until now is the knowing anything about the magnetic field around the black hole.
Uh-huh.
Because this can seriously change things. It can steal the angular momentum from things, or it can shoot things out in jets. So it can completely change the picture whether or not there's a magnetic field and how strong it is. And we worked out the value of the magnetic field, which I don't know if the jargon is of any interest to, but it's a few hundred gauss.
Okay.
At the event horizon of the black hole.
So how does that compare to the Earth's magnetic field?
Well, the Earth's magnetic field is about half a gauss, so this is a few hundred times more than that.
Right.
And the interesting thing with this is, well, the black hole at the center of our galaxy is not super bright, and that was kind of a mystery.
Okay.
But what happens is that when the material is falling into the black hole, it becomes ionized, and this magnetic field actually slows down the accretion process.
Right.
So it's kind of like it's controlling the diet of the black hole.
It's putting a brake on things.
Exactly. So without this, the black hole would just be gorging on all the material around it. But this kind of regulates it.
Okay.
And it's the first time we've been able to measure something like that.
Wow, that's
cool.
That's really, really cool. Also, I think you mentioned this, but the pulsar in question that you were looking at, I believe it's what you guys call a magnetar.
Yes.
Could you maybe go into that a bit more as well? Because magnetars are some of the most fascinating objects, I think, in the universe.
Yes, well, magnetars are the highest magnetic field pulsars. So they have values of the magnetic field that are 100 trillion times stronger than that of the Earth, something
wow.
like that. So
yeah.
They're seriously magnetic, and they're 100 to 1,000 times more magnetic than a typical pulsar.
Okay.
And there's maybe 20 or so of those, 20 or 30 of those known. And until a few years ago, all of them were seen to emit in X-ray and gamma rays exclusively.
Ah.
And never visible in radio. But they have recently been seen to be visible in radio, a handful of them. In fact, this is the fourth one just.
Wow, okay.
So this is quite a rare object. We know four objects that are magnetars visible in the radio.
Yeah.
And it just happens to be in the galactic center.
So you guys hit the pulsar jackpot here.
Exactly.
Okay, well. And so now you've got an estimate of the strength of the field around the black hole, and where do you go from here? What's the sort of the next steps to in terms of studying this and in terms of looking maybe for more pulsars around the black hole? Or?
Yes, well, the main motivation for trying to find pulsars in the galactic center is to measure the weird effects of gravity that you get there. So all of the predictions of Einstein are magnified hugely in the galactic center because basically because the mass of the black hole is so huge. It's mm-hmm. 4 million times the mass of the sun.
Yeah, well.
So everything gets magnified by that factor of 4 million.
Sure.
It's also condensed into a small area, so it gets magnified by that factor as well.
Right.
So all these effects that would be small in the solar system or impossible to even see in the solar system or in mm-hmm. any lab on Earth are hugely magnified and measurable there. If you have a pulsar close enough to it that you can use it as a tool. So that's why we've done so many surveys of there. And that's why we were excited to see this, because our models of the galaxy and how we think we understand things tell us there should be 1,000 pulsars within 1 parsec of the black hole. But we had found precisely zero.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard until the beginning of the year. Yeah, that no one can find the pulsars near the center.
And as I said, there's many reasons why they might be obscured and blocked. But this finding this one, and particularly something as obscure as a magnetar, really gives us hope that they're there and that we can find them.
Yeah, sure. If you found one of the rarest ones, then the more common ones have to be there, hiding there somewhere.
Yes. And during our surveys where we weren't finding anything, we were trying to come up with reasons why that wasn't the case.
Right.
And it was educated guesswork. But now we've seen them, we've been able to see this magnetar, and some of these obscuring effects are not as strong as we thought.
Okay.
And now we actually have a handle on that.
So you can fine-tune your observations to sort of better look for the
exactly.
pulsars that should be there.
So we had been drifting towards higher and higher frequencies.
Yeah.
Because these obscuring effects kick in at the low frequencies. The problem is that pulsars aren't as bright at high frequencies.
Mm-hmm, I see.
So you have to try and find the middle ground.
Right.
I think we're zeroing in on that.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks very much, Evan. That was really interesting. And maybe hope to see you sometime in the future on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.